To the Second Court of Appeals. You have on your panel today Judge Lisa Kerr and Judge Lee Gabriel, and I'm Sue Walker. We have you all first up on our docket today, and after your case is through, the court will be in a brief recess for a panel change. With that, counsel, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor, we are.
We are, Your Honor.
All right, our clerk will call the case, please.
The court will now call the Second Court of Appeals.
If it pleases the court, I'm David Keltner, together with Joe Greenhill and a host of others. Gerald Pruitt from the City Attorney's Office, Chris Mosley as well, represent the City of Fort Worth. This is an interesting case, and you've indulged us with a lot of briefing because of the cross appeals. Let me tell you how this case started, and I think the issues that we want to discuss today. First off, the ordinance was passed by the City of Fort Worth in a response to crime-related issues raised by citizens, and the City Council was petitioned. City Fort Worth was not the only city that had problems with this. There were some issues with the City of Denton. Additionally, there were issues with Amarillo. You've seen the reported decisions of that in Corpus Christi, throughout the Valley, and in Austin. Also, there were public pronouncements that are referenced in the footnotes of the brief. Governor Abbott was third in the line of attorney generals questioning the constitutionality of the exemption statute. And additionally, our Senator Jane Nelson blocked legislation until she could get Governor Abbott's opinion, and then did not do any additional legislation to basically approve eight-liner machines. But here's the bottom line. First off, no owner of a game room has complained yet to a court system about these ordinances. The only one that has done so is the people that lease the machines, operate it, and take a cut off the top of those. That doesn't mean anything necessarily, and we are not saying that there is no jurisdictional issues here. The bottom line is this, though. The Occupations Code does not preempt the local ordinances for two reasons. First, by the plain language of the Occupations Code in 2153, the language used does not show clear and unmistakable intent to preempt. Additionally, and importantly on that, that is not the legislature's only pronouncement on eight-liners. Specifically, they are covered under the local government code as well, which gives approximately 18 counties in this state the express authority and actually invitation to regulate those by local ordinances. Second, by the language of 2153-003, there's no doubt about one thing. This statute, with the Occupations Code, was not meant to authorize the operation of eight-liner machines if they violate the Constitution or the Penal Code. That's going to be our first issue. I know the first thing the court will want to know is there jurisdiction for a civil court to look at a criminal statute? So I'm going to start there because that's where we have done a lot of battle in the briefing. I'm going to cite one case to you that we have not cited in the brief because I think it is helpful. First off, and I will file a letter on that, but it is the Texas Educational Association versus Leaper, a 1994 case. This court is familiar with it. It is the homeschooling case written by Justice Hecht that declared, to the extent that the Education Code did not permit homeschooling, that it was unconstitutional. We'll talk about that in some detail, but let me first tell you I think there are three reasons why we can bring this issue this way. First off, this is not a criminal statute. It's in the criminal code, we will admit, but it does not criminalize anything. Other Supreme Court opinions have addressed and Court of Appeals opinions have addressed this kind of situation. Second, equally as important, remember the status we're in. They brought a declaratory judgment action against us. We said no. You don't. 2153 doesn't preempt anything because what it is based on and its whole premise is it's not going to apply if things are if it's unconstitutional or violates the penal code. So the subject of constitutionality is ancillary to, as the Leeper case held and several others have held, to the issue. Finally, we think we fall into one of Morales's exceptions as well, the way the pleadings eventually came down. But let me start with Leeper. In Leeper, there was a provision of the Texas Education Code that said that there had to be mandatory school attendance for all children in the state, and parents were directed to get their children there. Based on that, and with a reference to the Texas Education Code, the penal code criminalized truancy and told parents that they had to get there on punishment of some crimes, although lesser crimes, and additionally, the family code used that as a basis for altering parental rights and actually removal of the children. What happened is a number of homeschoolers filed suit in Tarrant County in Charlie Murray's court years ago and said, listen, that's not right. We're homeschool and that's okay. There is an exemption. The exemption was for private schools, but the TEA said that homeschoolers weren't private schools by definition, therefore they were out. So the issue went eventually to this court, and Hal Lattimore reversed Charlie Murray's agreement with the homeschoolers, and it went to the Texas Supreme Court. Justice Heck, before he was Chief Justice, decided the case, and he had to look at jurisdiction. And he said, although the consequence of violating the education code is to write yourself into criminal danger through the penal code, it in and of itself is not a criminal statute. Therefore, the Morales issue, which the other sides base their entire attack on us, does not apply. And he goes into great detail in that. We think if that's the case, that's certainly what we have here. What is at issue here is the occupations code and whether it preempts. That's the issue we're going at. The fact that it may violate the Constitution is one of the reasons it may not apply because of 2153.003. So we think we fall in that. The second issue.
Let me interrupt you and ask a question.
Please.
I'm sorry if my voice is kind of scratchy, but when it comes to seeking a declaratory judgment that a statute is unconstitutional, whether it's civil or criminal or anything else, what exactly is it that gives the city standing to get a declaration?
Your Honor, I think we have it two ways because of the procedural way in which we find ourselves. First off, they brought the declaratory judgment action on preemption. They say the public policy of the state, and remember, that's one thing that Morales has an exception. Let me explain it that way. It's probably be better. The exception is that if you fall into the situation where there is a state policy that is civil in nature involved, and there is a vested interest involved in that case, then a civil court can consider the constitutionality of a criminal statute. We think we fall into that exception. They raised the state policy. We are attacking the state policy. It is at the core of our argument. Second, they claim, and we have briefed opposing each other, but take them at their word, they claim a liberty interest, which would fall under the Morales opinion and Judge Cornyn's opinion in that case. As a result of that, we think we have jurisdiction. Additionally, under Leeper, which found Morales did not apply because it's not really a criminal statute here. And let me explain that. 47014B does not criminalize anything. In fact, it exempts. I'll admit it's in the penal code. I will admit that it's part of the structure of the Penal Code. So was the Texas Education Code as it related to the Penal Code in Leeper. As a result of that, we think we fall and have jurisdiction to bring this up. Otherwise, it's going to be very difficult for us ever to be able to do that.
But, Mr. Keltner, hasn't the city previously seized eight-liners as subject to forfeiture?
Your Honor, I believe that eight-liners have been seized. They've certainly been seized otherwise.
So and then
I take
there would
your,
have to be a crime.
I take your point that there could be another issue on seizure where they can be brought up. But remember, seizure itself is a civil, not criminal offense, and the same issue applies. Now, the court on those issues, the Supreme Court, has looked at that. And in one of the cases you considered as well, in interpretation of statutes and the eventual constitutionality of this statute on the basis of a forfeiture as well, and I would have to admit that. The constitutional argument is, the substance is really straightforward, and it's basically this. The truth of the matter is that five Texas Supreme Court opinions, two Court of Criminal Appeals opinions, have all said that the attempt by the legislature to establish a lottery is unconstitutional, no matter how small the lottery prizes are. In City of Wink in 1936, it was directly on this point. Randall versus State in 1874, shortly or as this amendment was being considered to the Constitution, Hardy versus State in 2003 with Judge Jefferson. Now, let me say on Hardy, Hardy did not reach the constitutional issue, but the court went into some detail to say, oh, by the way, we have previously held that any attempt to establish a lottery is unconstitutional. In Tussey versus State, and the Court of Criminal Appeals did the same thing, and when there was an attempt by the legislature to allow charitable organizations to conduct a lottery or raffle, and that was held to be unconstitutional without an amendment. We now have that amendment, by the way. Berry versus State is important in one respect. It's from 1898, and it was at the end of a discussion of lotteries in great detail, and what Berry held was, and the defendant came in and said, listen, wait a minute, the state licensed us and is taxing us, and as a result, we must be legitimate. And what the Court of Criminal Appeals held is, any attempt to license or tax something that is unconstitutional is, and I love this word and I seldom get to use it, nugatory. And as a result of that, that regulation was not allowed to be applied. Now, what does the, and by the way, three attorney generals in a row have all found criminal dangers with this. It started with Dan Morales, continued with John Cornyn, who filed briefs, and I want to discuss that.
But isn't it true that courts have taken a different view, some courts have taken a different view of whether those AG opinions were accurate?
One court has, and that is the Owens case. No doubt about it, and these on by my loyal opposition are the lawyers in the Owens case. They say it is so strong and it is so important to have res judicata effect on any criminal prosecution. But they ignore the three Texas Supreme Court cases and two Court of Appeals opinions, Court of Criminal Appeals that would hire differently. Let me explain that in some detail. Owens didn't decide the constitutionality issue. It avoided it. It did so expressly. In fact, it ended up the discussion of constitutionality by holding that the Constitution was irrelevant to its determination because the Constitution does not prohibit the mere possession of gambling paraphernalia. It prevents establishment, or in other words, operation of a lottery. And what the court said, I'm going to read it briefly, although the operation or use of eight-liners might offend Article 3, Section 47 of the Constitution and might be unlawful under the Penal Code, questions we do not decide, and then says the Constitution or Article 3, Section 47A, it was irrelevant to its determination. Now,
I have a question.
Yes.
You're seeking a a declaration of unconstitutionality based on a facial challenge, correct?
Yes.
So you're saying that there can be no machines that really do have fuzzy animals?
No, not saying that at all. And in fact, this has been called the fuzzy animal exception. Remember, the issues of like a Chuck E. Cheese or a carnival game, those fall under constitutional amendment provisions. Others fall equally as important under their skill matters, which are not discussed in the statute at all and wouldn't be a lottery under the definition that we had in the city of Wink from the Texas Supreme Court. So it does not apply to those things.
47014B is just surplusage?
It's not surplusage. We believe it to be unconstitutional, especially as applied. If they say their machines, which are used to award a succession of prizes that accumulate and add up to things that are redeemable for flat-screen TVs.
But you can do that main event and Dave and Buster's, too. So, I mean, to go back to Judge Walker's question, I'm a little confused. I mean, if fuzzy animals and as you say, more skilled types of games like that are always fine, then why did the legislature
because
need
those
to?
Those aren't a lottery under the definition of lottery from the city of Wink. It has to be a game of chance that you pay an opportunity to take a chance. No doubt these are games of chance because in fact, our stipulations on that. The light's gone off. I can't tell if the red has gone on.
The red has gone off, but do you have further questions, Justice Kerr?
The one issue I did not get to that I will discuss briefly in rebuttal additionally is the preemption nature because we don't believe it is preempted.
Thank you, Mr. Kelton.
Good afternoon. Justices, may it please the court. My name is Anatole Barnstone. I represent Stephanie Riley et al., who are the plaintiffs in the lower court case and are the cross appellants and appellees in this case. I share my argument with Steve Fenoglio, who's my co-counsel. It's been 3 years of litigation. We've had summary judgment motions filed, we've had discovery, we've had answers, we've had briefs to the Court of Appeals on an interlocutory attempted appeal, we've had briefs to the Court of Appeals in this appeal, and what I still have not heard from the city is what do the words uniform statewide mean in section 2153.001 of the Occupations Code. What does it mean? Why has the city not argued that? That is the central issue in this case. It's our first cause of action. It is the most important cause of action. It is central to this case, and it absolutely shows, we contend, that this Fort Worth licensing and the zoning ordinances are preempted. The city recognizes that Chapter 2153 applies in this case. If you read Section 20-107A of the licensing ordinance, you will see that the licensing ordinance expressly refers to the Chapter 2153 of the Texas Occupations Code. It says that the tax that they impose in that section is specifically authorized by Section 2153.451 of the Occupations Code. What does that tell us? That tells us that everything the city is arguing now that the chapter does not apply to these ordinances is just simply incorrect. They did not think that at the time. If it was not already obvious, one only needs to look at the statute and the ordinances. The definition of an amusement redemption machine is entirely encompassed within the state law definition of a coin-operated skill or pleasure machine. There's no question that everything that the city is trying to prohibit is licensed by the state of Texas. The 2153.001 was the predecessor to that statute, was created in 1989. The context of that decision to insert the language, the key language, uniform statewide, the context in doing that in 1989 is that there had been three Court of Appeals, actually several unreported and three reported Court of Appeals opinions out of the Houston 1st and 14th Court of Appeals saying that the words comprehensive statewide regulation does not create preemption. That was in 1988. The next legislative session, 1989, they passed the statute. They added only two words to the statute. Now it's comprehensive, uniform, statewide. Why did they do that in 1989? What were they trying to accomplish? There can't be any reasonable question that the words uniform and statewide mean exactly what they say. Uniform means...
Well, of course, it would have been very easy for the legislature to have inserted language like it has in other statutes that expressly talks about preemption or uses that word. I mean, do you find any substantive difference between uniform statewide and statutes that use the term preempt?
There are many different ways that a legislature or Congress can preempt local regulation. Certainly, the statutes cited by the city are correct. Those create preemption. That does not mean that uniform statewide does not create preemption. In fact, uniform statewide is the paramount way to create preemption. We cited in our brief at least a dozen states that use the term uniform.
Or are there any Texas statutes you're aware of dealing with different subject areas that use uniform statewide that have been interpreted as meaning preempted?
No, Your Honor, not in Texas. The best example, Your Honor, I think is in Georgia, where they said that the words uniform statewide are the paramount example of how a statute can be preempting. The state has every good reason to say that an amusement machine operator who is licensed by the state of Texas, pays state taxes, obeys state regulations, should not also have to do the same with local taxes and regulations and licensing. There is no question that if assuming, and I believe the words are clear, that uniform statewide does create preemption, there's no question that the legislature had perfectly good reason to do that, and they had the power to do that. If the legislature wanted to say that that a city couldn't regulate plumbing because plumbing is statewide licensed, they could do that. Lawyers, ice cream trucks, anything. If the state decides that the laws that regulate those activities should be uniform statewide, it's the same result. You cannot have regulations that are in effect in the city of Fort Worth that are also not uniform statewide. By definition, they cannot be. The Fort Worth city limits only go so far. Really quickly on TABC preemption, I think that was fairly addressed in the party's briefs. I don't understand the city's argument that the alcoholic beverage code, which they expressly admit creates preemption, they put it in their own brief, but they're saying that it does not preempt their own ordinances. That makes no sense. On the question of substantive due course of law, we're going to rely on our briefing on that. We would just point out that the city has not, even to this point, attempted to justify what the challenged ordinances are for. If they had given any reason to justification, then at least the court would have some basis to consider it. They gave none. The court granted the city's no evidence summary judgment. We believe that that is an error if the city should have filed a traditional motion for summary judgment, produced their own evidence as to what the statute ordinance is for, and then we could at least have an argument on that. We never got that far. So the court's decision to grant no evidence summary judgment was an error. Really quickly, Your Honor, on the question of jurisdiction, it's clear that this is an advisory opinion. The city does not like A-liners. It doesn't want them in the city. We understand that. There's no question that the city council was acting in good faith when they passed these ordinances. If they don't want the A-liners in their city, they need to do something besides just going to court and have the court declare that Section 4701-4B is unconstitutional. That is the essence of an advisory opinion. That is very clear under all the case law there could be nothing more advisory than that. So we believe
under what circumstances could a city or any other governmental entity challenge the constitutionality of that exception? What would be the factual circumstance required to tee that up?
Well, certainly the best one is the one that happened in the Owens case that we worked on. In that case, the defendant in a criminal case where she was charged with misdemeanor gambling offenses attempted to assert Section 4701-4B as effectively a defense. The court, the prosecutor filed a motion to declare that defense unconstitutional because that affected the proof that needed to be put on at that trial. It affected substantively what was going to happen to that defendant. That is clearly not an advisory opinion. When the court granted the prosecutor's motion, the court was wrong, but the court certainly had jurisdiction to do that.
So is it your view that only in the context of a criminal prosecution could somebody properly raise a constitutional challenge to that exception?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. There are other ways that could offer a civil court jurisdiction to consider, construe, determine the validity of Section 4701-4B. Fishing for examples, there was a city was filing a nuisance lawsuit, which is authorized by the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, against the eight-liner operators, and they were trying to say that these are illegal activities. That is an important element of proof under the nuisance statute, and that would be an appropriate use of civil courts to determine what the meaning of and constitutionality of Section 4701-4B. I hope I answered your question. Lastly, Your Honor, on the Morales issue, I do not understand the city's argument that Section 4701-4B is not a criminal statute. It is clearly a criminal statute. It is in the penal code. The Morales doctrine was not adopted in order to prevent anyone from challenging a criminal statute specifically. It was adopted, formed by the courts over a period of decades because the courts of appeals and the Supreme Court feels that civil courts should defer to criminal courts in the interpretation and validity of the statutes in the penal code. That is not a question of whether this is an increase or a decrease in the amount of criminality. It's simply a question of, is this something we should defer to criminal courts to decide? And we believe the answer is clearly yes. And I will yield the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Stephen Finoglio, and I'm co-counsel for appellees, cross-appellants. Two things on the constitutionality. In 1973, the legislature rewrote the definition of a lottery, and that's found in 4701 paren 7 of the Texas Penal Code that's been briefed by both sides. In 1980, the voters of the state rewrote, and this is very crucial, rewrote the Article 3, Section 47, prohibition against lotteries. And importantly, they struck a large part of that sentence. And specifically, and this is addressed in the Owens case, they struck, the provisions said, the legislature shall pass laws prohibiting the establishment of lotteries and gift enterprises. And then they struck, as well as the sale of tickets in lotteries, gift enterprises, or other evasions involving the lottery principle. So that evasions language did not survive the 1980 vote of the voters of the Texas to the Texas Constitution. Then in 1993 and in 1995, the legislature passed the definition, amended the definition of a gambling device to include 47014 paren subparagraph B. So what does that mean? I would concede the city's argument, but for the rewrite of the constitutional provision, that they have a darn good case that my client's machines are prohibited under the Constitution. But that's not the jurisprudence of this state, and it hasn't been the jurisprudence of this state since 1980. Owens lays out, and a number of cases cited in Owens, the legislature can define terms. And that's what the legislature did in 1980 when they defined the definition of a lottery, and in 1993 and 1995 when they rewrote the definition of a gambling device to have the subparagraph B. A couple of minor points. Counsel said that there's no evidence that my clients own machines. Not true. The stipulation in this case states that plaintiffs own the machines. And that is, I may have to find that later. It's in the record. There's also a stipulation, and by the way, there's a deposition in the record. Stephanie Riley, who's the lead plaintiff, owns her business and owns eight-liner machines and designs eight-liner machines to be compliant with 47014B. There's also a stipulation that every machine is played either predominantly by chance, involving little or no skill. You made the comment correctly about Dave and Buster's and Main Event. Those crane machines operate under the same exact provision. And Ms. Riley's deposition made it clear because she's designed those machines too and owns those type of machines. So it doesn't matter what the city argues about, well, if you don't buy our argument that 47014B is gone, is unconstitutional, then the machines are illegal because they operate on the chance principle. 47014 clearly says for a 4B machine, it's okay if there's no chance, or little or no. They're legal under 4B if they meet that standard. So what you're left with? The provision has survived 47014B countless legal challenges since the Owens case was handed down, and Mr. Barnstone and I were involved in that case. And that's been 17 years. You've got some agey opinions, clearly don't like 4B, and they're of some authority, but they're not black letter law like courts of appeals cases are, that we argue are directly on point. Bottom line, 47014B is constitutional. If there's a remedy, it's either, as Mr. Barnstone suggested, in a properly constituted criminal case, for the city can challenge it straight up, or go to the legislature and rewrite the law. Thank you.
Let me address preemption first, because preemption is the basis of this case. That's their declaratory judgment. That is what the judgment of the court of the trial court is based on. Truth of the matter is, there is no statewide presumption. I'll answer the question. What does uniform statewide regulation mean, or application mean? It means that it can be a summary of what the legislature says it is that divides the power to regulate, between local governments under the local government code, and additionally in the somewhat in the occupations code. They ignore completely local government code section or chapter 234. It allows 15 counties to regulate virtually everything, regulate exactly what the city is regulating. They regulate the areas of the county that eight-liners can be in, 1,000 feet from schools, just like we do, churches, residential areas, and hospitals. Additionally, you can have other regulations for licenses, with licensing at $1,000 a shot, and there's an invitation in the code to do that. Now, how, in heaven's name, is there a statewide preemption if under, and this is under tab B, I believe, in the, here, Joe, look at that right here. This is tab B of our handout to you, which also was mentioned actually in a footnote in their reply brief, but it goes into detail saying the things that county governments can regulate. I'm not arguing that it says the city can. What I am arguing is there can be no statewide preemption if, in fact, the legislature invites the counties and certain counties, which was, by the way, the statute was amended June 15, 2017. The trial court did not have an opportunity to hear that because it was long after the proceedings, but it that included Tarrant County as well. But my proposition is, and I think it's foolproof, how in heaven's name can you say there's a statewide preemption by the Occupations Code when another statute expressly delegates and invites county governments to have opposing ordinances at odds with the Occupation Code?
Well, then should the county not be the one imposing rules to conscribe where these eight-liners are located?
Excellent question. And the county government could do it and may very well. The issue, though, that I'm raising this on is their cross-appeal about a general statewide overall preemption that prevents the cities from doing anything. They didn't tell you about the local government code directly, but the local government code demonstrates that that was not intended. So just the trial judge got that part of this right. And there's no doubt about that. Let me answer two things. Justice Kerr, you asked that, I think, the question, how in heck would the city bring up the constitutionality? I'll have to admit you could do it through a criminal prosecution if you could find one. Second, the issue is, Rule Walker, speaking for a unanimous Supreme Court on this issue in Passel, asked the same question and then answered it, and that was the prohibition of students joining high school sororities and fraternities, and rose again out of Fort Worth Charlie Murray's court and basically said that was unconstitutional, and the way you brought it up was through a civil court because it was actually the enforcement of a TEA regulation rather than an actual criminal issue, although it could be criminalized as well. AMOT, Association of Music and Entertainment Systems, that is actually in our handout as well, deals with this situation too and says when you're looking at a statewide policy and you are attacking that, the fact that it involves a constitutional challenge is ancillary and Morales is not implicated. Same basis upon which Nathan Hecht, to strike down the prohibition against homeschooling, relied upon to have a civil court decide the issue of constitutionality of a provisions that would involve criminal jeopardy. We have the same situation here. We recognize Morales and Morales's issues. And if you read all of the cases together, and all these, Leeper certainly discusses Morales in detail and finds it doesn't apply. For those reasons, we ask you to reverse the trial court's decision, and I think that this is generally a render case, although there could be some issues related to the statewide preemption issue that would require remand. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your arguments here today. We appreciate them. They've been helpful to the court. Your case is submitted, and we will be in brief recess for a panel change.
Thank you, Your Honor.